Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Brainstorm Brewery. We survived Vegas somehow. We did it. Barely. Yeah, that's about right.
Hair of the dog, man.
Yeah. I had to sleep an entire day after the event and then sleep some more to bring this podcast to you all. We're recording this on Tuesday night as opposed to our usual Monday night because we've all been recovering for 48 hours.
We were supposed to record in Vegas on like Thursday and didn't do that.
Some of us have been recovering. Some of us have been stuck in airports, right?
Yeah, I got stuck in New Jersey's airport for about 6 or 7 hours and then my flight got officially canceled when it had just been delayed 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, the dream, yeah. Right?
And then I ended up getting a rental car with, like, 3 other random strangers and making the trek back from New Jersey to Syracuse at 2 in the morning. Got back at 6 in the morning and then started working on Magic stuff and, like, submitting my article and doing orders. And then I just vended a modern event and now I'm here.
How random of strangers?
Like, I met them at the airport.
Like, not Magic players, just, like, complete randos.
Just old people who were coming up from Florida. It was, like, a couple, like, an elderly couple in their 70s and then their kid.
Wow. Interesting.
I mean, like, the rental would have been, like, $600 to get myself, so we cut it down to, like, $480 for all of us, and so we split that and
whatever. Sure. I guess that's an interesting idea. So, it was a 6-hour drive, you said?
It was 4 hours. We left at 2 in the morning and got back at 6 a.m.
I didn't even know 70-year-olds could stay up that long.
Well, all the flights were canceled, and then they sent out of the parking lot, and there was no rental car there. So they had to get on a train.
So why was your flight canceled? Was it weather?
It was weather-related.
Oh, so yeah, you were just hosed.
I mean, what
kind of weather?
Thunderstorms, I guess, in Northeast.
Hmm. I could see that. We flew by a bunch of that shit.
That's the thing for people who don't know. If the airline cancels your flight because of an equipment thing or their flight's late or whatever, you're entitled to all kinds of compensation. It's great. They put you up at a hotel, blah, blah, blah. If it's canceled because of weather, you're just screwed. You're on the hook for the hotel. You're on the hook for the car. Like, they'll put you on the next flight, but you don't know when it's going to be. Yeah, it's a disaster. The absolute nightmare is getting stranded by weather. Yeah.
I mean, it was whatever.
Actually, the absolute nightmare is demons ripping your arms off while your family's flayed alive, but I guess, like, being stranded from weather is pretty bad, too.
Yeah, different concerns, I guess.
Am I the only one that worries about demons ripping my arms off while my family's flayed
alive? I live in a nice, God-fearing part of the country, so I don't have to worry about that.
My only 3 fears are alligators, crocodiles, and aneurysms.
Right? Because an aneurysm can happen anywhere, at any time.
It's the silent killer, Jason.
I'm sure that was some sort of Joker reference I didn't get.
Yeah, to a television show that hasn't been funny for 3 years. So.
Okay, all right. Anyways, there's something way more important. We're going to get to Vegas more later. however, if you're looking at the video, boom.
I'm not looking at the video.
It's a button.
I'm not looking at the video.
And it says, I pooped today.
Congrats, Corbin.
Thank you. It's got a little stick man. Sitting on a toilet. But you know what's important about this stick man on this toilet?
Tell me, Corbin.
This stick man has a little stool. It's got a little stool. And you know what the rest of his button says? It says www.
Corbin, you can say poop on the internet. You don't have to say stool.
SquattyPotty.com. We did it, everybody. It's real. We've been teasing it for, it feels like, a year now. It's happening. Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by Squatty Potty.
We are the number 2 podcast.
The number 1 Magic Finance podcast is now the podcast of the number 2. Everybody go to www.squattypotty.com/BSB. Buy yourself a Squatty Potty. This stool will change your life. We all got sent ours.
Buy yourself X Squatty Potties, where X is the number of turlets in your house.
Yep. Maybe a backup just in
Corbin
case.
Corbin has to get one for every tree. Do you know how hard that is?
Dang!
I've had my Squatty Potty for a little over a week now, and I
was
went
home.
Out of town, and suddenly I had to poop without my Squatty Potty. And
wasn't it miserable?
Did
they give us any ad copy to read, or did they trust me?
they said, we think that you know how to reach your fans. Talk to them about poop. So here we are.
I used it for about a week, and it seems like pooping's easier.
I got put up in an Airbnb for a week in Las Vegas. Gorgeous house, beautiful pool, but the bathroom was not the same.
Yeah, no, man, squatty that's... potty. So yeah, we've been pretty tight-lipped about this. I told a few content creators in Vegas, but for the most part, we are just giddily sitting on this, waiting for the check to clear. So it's official.
It is official. It took a while. The people with Squatty Potty have been great to work with. So shout out to them. Shout out to the product. This was awesome. For people, I mean, this whole thing started just on a whim when I was reading a Reddit AMA some number of months ago. And I was just like, saw Squatty Potty talking about podcast sponsorships. And I was like, you know what? I got a podcast. Screw it. Let's talk to them. And here we are. And now you can't say I've never done anything for the podcast. Go buy a Squatty Potty.
We can still say it, even if it's not true. We can just create false narratives. That's not hard.
Yeah, you know how we used to say, buy a Squatty Potty, but not yet? The time has come. Go buy your Squatty Potty.
The time is now, yeah. Go buy a Squatty Potty.
And hey, if you want to spread out your purchases over the next couple months so it looks like we have more suction when they do, and not like a huge wad shooting right at the beginning. It's like, wow, you sold a bunch of units, and then never again. That couldn't hurt, too.
So. I mean, the holidays are going to be coming up, like,
Seriously, the incredible thing about Squatty Potty here, right? On a completely serious note, as serious as we could possibly be here, they've been around for however many years at this point, and it started off, they had a great viral commercial that people thought was hilarious, it was a novelty, blah, 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 and it was, you know, like, it was a thing where it was like, it was a fad, everyone was talking about it for a minute because of this sweet commercial. But they're still around, right? That means that the product has to be good. It has to sell itself for this company to still exist based on that. You know, anyone can come along and get lucky on the internet and have a viral commercial, but to have an actual product that continues to sell years later means you're actually doing something right. So,
okay, let's not blumpkin this brand too much. Like, here's the deal. Here's my Squatty Potty pitch. You put your feet up on the stool while you dump, and then it makes dumping easier.
Also share the YouTube video we posted of this. We went to great lengths, used all of our technical prowess, called in all of our favors, made an epic little commercial to advertise this. So,
our original director was fired and Ron Howard stepped in to finish.
YouTube.com/brainstormbrewery. Check out the commercial, share it, like it, subscribe to it, all that stuff. And I don't know, I think there's probably something else you can do to support the podcast. I'm not
Finger
sure.
Blast it, Corbin. Are you a novice at this podcast?
Sorry. Yeah, the bell icon.
Sorry.
Take it to dinner.
Give it the old prostate exam.
I see. You could also like our Facebook page. I don't know if there's anything else you could do, though. You guys have any ideas?
Follow us on Twitter.
Oh, good one. Good one. Is that it?
I don't know. Here's the thing. There's a lot of free ways you can support this podcast. I know you're like, hey, I keep hearing about this Patreon at patreon.com/brainstormbrewery.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
And I want to give them money, but, like, honestly, if you just wanted to take 2 seconds to go to and like our Facebook page, finger blast the bell icon, subscribe to our YouTube channel, just get our numbers up, because we know what our podcast download numbers are, and they are respectable for a 7-year podcast. Our YouTube and Facebook likes are lagging behind, so we would like to catch up to people that have, you know, been at the YouTube's a little longer. We'd like to catch up. We think... we have a pretty good listenership. So, hey, if you want to, for $0, make us real happy and support us. And be entered into a chance for a giveaway, right? Every couple milestones we're going to do.
Yeah, we announced the last one a couple weeks ago. We'll be doing another one before too long. I got product here to give away. Let's do it.
Yeah, so get in on it. Go like our Facebook, finger blast the bell icon, like the YouTube. Just give us some likes and some retweets and some, you know, some $0 support.
I guess what That'd Jason is saying is you could also go to patreon.com/brainstorm.
Or that.
Yeah, we got prizes. You guys know about that. That's fine. Patreon's a cool thing. We talk about in the Discord that you can access for $1 a month, which is way too low.
Also, you get access to a spreadsheet. And here's the cool thing about the spreadsheet. If you email me asking why you haven't gotten sent the spreadsheet every week, it's because it's 2018 and a single spreadsheet can be updated as a living document and you only need to click on the link once.
What?
Yeah. So if you...
Someone's like, I only got the old spreadsheet. Where's the new spreadsheet?
Yeah.
That's
so,
how I talk.
Yeah. That's a thing.
Anyways, all right. That's enough shilling this week.
I mean...
Let's do Breaking Bulk.
Don't shill where you eat, right?
Breaking bolt time. Breaking bolt time.
Oh, yeah, Breaking Bulk. There's so much good stuff.
It's a pick. Breaking Bulk. The end.
White uncommon from an unset. Go.
White uncommon from an unset?
Little girl.
Wrong. Little girl's common, I think.
No, little girl's uncommon, okay. I think.
That's a good guess.
I don't know any uncommons from unset.
And that's why this is a really good Breaking Bulk.
Who the hell gives a damn? It's not unglued, is it? It's unhinged.
What right? is it?
Okay, so you're both just cashing it in the...
Yeah, who cares?
Okay. Knight of the Kitchen Sink, not B, not C, not D, but A. The A version of Knight of the Kitchen Sink is a 2-mana, white-white, first strike, protection from black borders.
Oh.
Yeah, this card is cube unstoppable. This card is $1.86 market price for the normal one and $12 for the foil one.
Just for version A. Are the other ones worth anything?
Not a single goddamn penny.
That's great. That's great, because you get that those. People nice, won't actually. Even sort them.
No, people are just going to be, oh, it's the knight of the whatever. All the various A versions are left-facing, right-facing, wackadoodle, like... Unstable Bulk is pure garbage, except for a very
Where do you check to make sure you have the A version? Where on the card does it say which version?
I mean, it just says protection from black borders. It doesn't tell you.
You know,
there's no...
So you don't know, is what you're saying.
No, I mean, saying version A, B, C, and D is just a system developed by, like, Wizards. Like, you would have to go to, like,
so
the Unstable...
They don't actually say on the card that it's A of a possible...
You'd
B.
have to go to, like, the card image the gallery on Wizards' website to see which one is specifically A, B, C, or D.
That's really annoying that they did that, and I love that they did it in a joke set, because I feel like other card games would have just done that.
Yeah. So, only the one with protection from black borders is playable. It's obviously...
$12 foil.
Yeah, it's a cube thing. Like, you'd obviously play it in a cube has the majority black borders. But it's also probably just being picked up by casual players who are willing to play on cards in their casual unsleeved dirtle games. So,
you know, I really like the fact that on stuff gets used in cubes, because some of that stuff doesn't break the game. It's just fun. You know, it's like, oh, I have a booster tutor or stuff like that. I like
that. Some of them are good. There's like the gotcha ones are not fun, but yeah, you can pick. That's the cool thing about Cube, is that you can pick and choose what's fun, and you get to add the best of the unsets while leaving out the toxic and bad, poorly designed stuff. So Unstable is great, because everybody opened those boxes, pulled out the lands, pulled out the foils, pulled out a few certain rares like Urza and whatever, and then everything else got thrown in the trash can.
I still get unstuff in collections. I don't know what to do with all my copies of Night of the Hokey Pokey from 1997.
Yeah, right. All right, I'll go next. I've got one for you guys here that is a recent mover. It's in, I believe it was a uncommon originally, from Tempest. Red uncommon.
A Tempest Red uncommon, and that was reprinted?
It was reprinted, and it is.
It can't be Goblin. That's way too obvious.
Well, I'm bringing this up for a reason, and that reason is that this card is spiking right now, or just spiked, or however you want to say it.
Or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, sure, right? But it wasn't 2 weeks ago. It's been moving. It's still in the midst of spiking. Yeah. Does anyone know the exact reason for this? No? All right. Well, there's new goblins coming in.
Yeah, I think it's just a very powerful commander card that's slowly starting to dry up. It might have seen play on game nights or something like that. Like, maybe there's some sort of streamer or commander content producer who, like, championed the card that we're not aware of. But, like, the card's just really, really good.
Yeah, for people who don't know, 2-mana enchant, sack a creature, deals 1 damage to target creature or player.
It's just crazy because it's sack a creature, deal 1 damage to any target.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point, DJ. It was last reprinted in Dual Deck Speed vs. Cunning and or Commander 2013, whichever one of those was more recent. I assume it was the Dual
Speed vs. Cunning was like 3 years after the Commander printing,
that's what I said.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was in like the Prosh deck, I think.
Yes.
So, it's really spiking right now. It's one of those things that yeah, I mean, it was worth under a dollar for a long time, even, you know, the last several years, and is now moving for whatever reason. So, yeah, I wasn't trying to trick you guys up. It's just a card I wanted to talk about.
Because that's been a card forever.
I'll definitely find this in bulk. You get a commander deck with it in bulk all the time.
I bought 200 copies of this when Sam Black built that Zombardment deck, like,
yeah, the deck was
8 years ago. The deck was fun. No one cared. The price didn't move. These are in my box of shame.
Wow, good for you, man.
Yeah, I've managed to suck an MTG Finance into success way more times than not.
You can only fail up, man.
Yep, there are no misses, only long-term holds. Here's a long-term hold from a few years ago. It is a white-black Khans of Tarkir Uncommon.
Chief of the... whichever.
Ooh?
Scale.
Chief of the... your warriors get +1/+0.
Chief of
scale.
Yeah, chief of the warriors.
Chief of the edge.
Chief of the edge, yeah.
Chief of the scale gives toughness, and that
one of them is good and one of them is bad, essentially, as far as bulk goes.
They're both about the same price.
Okay.
Roughly. Chief of the edge is, you just pull that out of bulk. If you got a foil version, that's...
especially now that maybe with Najeela, especially.
Najeela. Yeah, exactly. The foils are only like 50 cents, too. That's, I'm not saying buy foils, because who's foiling out their stupid Najeela deck, but it's the most...
I'm sure.
It was in the top 5 2 weeks ago. It was in the top 3 last week, and it was the number 1 deck on EDH Rec this week. You know, out of all of Battle Bond, Najeela seems to be the only thing anyone's really focusing on. I haven't seen Pier and Toothy in, like, the top 25. I haven't seen...
I expected, you know, more people really to care about the Planeswalker combo, because they seem cool.
Yeah, yeah, no. But it's like a little tough to build around them, I guess.
That's what makes it cool. I don't know.
I mean, I have learned not to try to guess what people are going to play. Like, I used to, you know, when stuff got announced, I'm like, oh, people are going to play this, and then they didn't. And, like, I could be mad at people for not playing what I would want to play, but I've learned to just look at the data. And being patient and waiting for the data has taught me that, you know, I get 2-3 good weeks of picks of the week and Breaking Bulk out of one deck. And by the time that ship has sailed, we'll have M19 commanders to start building around, you know. So I just waited for the data, and that told me that Chief of the Edge is definitely a card to rip out of bulk. That's going to be a player.
All right, there you go. All right. I think it is time, everybody. Let's talk Vegas. How about that beta draft?
I was busy, like, packing up the booth and driving back to our house and then resting after, like, 45 hours of work. So.
Yeah, beta draft was something.
I saw Corbin milling around by the stage, and I was like, oh, beta draft. It's for beta males. But it turns out they were drafting booster packs of beta.
Yeah, it was the lowest hanging fruit possible. You did it. You did it.
I got you. So
no, beta drop was crazy.
If you aren't aware,
C get opened. I watched a Mox Emerald get opened.
I watched Paralyze go 8th pick.
Should we explain how Rochester draft works to people? Because
I mean, okay, so the quick breakdown is for Magic's 25th anniversary, Wizards/CFP/Powers That Be decided to raid the vault. Like, actually raid the Wizards of the Coast vault for packs of beta.
Sealed opened a sealed box of beta, removed 24 packs, put 12 packs back in the box, put the box back in the vault.
Yep, that's about right.
That's what I was told word for word from a Wizards employee. Yeah.
They so at Vegas, they ran 8 qualifiers. It was like a 5-round single elimination tournament, then a top 8 draft Dominaria. The winners made it into the top 8 draft on Sunday for the beta draft. And people had gloves. There were 1,000 cameras or 1,000,000 people watching. And it was insane. People were Rochester drafting. What that means is each pack
is open. It wasn't 1,000,000 people watching, but it was 22,000 people on Twitch, which is more than any Wizards event ever.
Yeah,
I would say.
Except for a Pro Tour. Pro Tours get much more than that. But it was the largest Grand Prix moment ever from what I've heard.
Okay.
So, Yeah, it was insane. And there were so many people there on hand for it being Sunday night. You know, everyone usually flies out Sunday night or drives home or whatever, right? Or they're at the casino at that point. But people stuck around. And I worked till 1 a.m., 1:15 a.m. is when I got done on Sunday night because we did this beta draft. We streamed it. But it was worth it because it was insane. Ben Stark, they do Rochester, right? So 24 packs. Each one's opened individually, one at a time. And then you pick going around the table until everyone has.
They put the rare down first, which bugged me. But the only
other
way,
the only there was no other way to do it without having to mess with the cards. I mean, so Eric Levine, the one of the best judges in the world, was the judge who earned this honor / responsibility / oh my god, I hope I don't screw up. And all the people were watching him open up these packs, and he had such a good process for slowly, carefully opening up the beta pack to not mess up anything inside. But yeah, if they were to do the rare last, it would have required a lot more dexterity for managing the cards.
They said they wanted to minimize handling, which it wasn't great for optics, but I guess it was good for, hey, we didn't bend your stupid card. So
yeah, it was a little worse for the viewing experience. Maybe they'll change it in Gen Con, etc. But it was, you know, it was just so crazy. It was so nice to be on hand. It's the only I asked. No one can recall. No, Wizards employees cannot recall an event anything like this for a beta draft.
I don't think beta had ever really been drafted because
It almost certainly wouldn't
have
been drafted.
No, the set wasn't designed to be drafted at all.
You know, but I'm sure 15, 20 years ago, somebody was like, "All right, I've got a set of beta. You guys want to Rochester it?" But this was the first time that, you know, in a publicized, hyped way, this has happened. It was crazy.
You know what was really funny? Like, I did a lot of Beta Limited on Chandelure because, like, I was just goofing around and I thought that was fun. Watching Magic players who were much, much better than me not know how to draft Beta was really gratifying. I got a real kick out of it. Like, LSV lost because he had, like, 16 playables because he kept taking $10 basics.
They're a little more than that, right?
Near meta on that, yeah. They're like 15.
Yeah. But anyways, it was cool. Now, Ben Stark clearly won the draft. So the prize was a beta starter.
No, it was an alpha.
Alpha no, starter and 2,500 cash. So actually, when it was just 2,500 cash, everyone was about
starter, it. Wasn't it?
No, they added that at the last minute.
It was a beta starter. I held it in my hands.
They said alpha starter all weekend. Would you even know the difference, Corbin?
I agree. That is what was said all weekend. I held it in my hands, and they're like, "Oh, it's actually beta."
So why even bother? Why even bother?
Yeah, why even bother? I think the going number four, the people were getting immediately just on the floor. I heard the going offer was 15K.
That's super low
for the beta starter. I agree. That was the baseline. So it's crazy. And the thing is, so Ben Stark clearly won because of the packs he opened. Right, his open. For the Rochester, he got an Underground Sea and a Mox Emerald. It's insane. So not only are they worth God knows how many thousands of dollars, right? They also are going to be theoretically in great condition. Like, the Underground Sea also looked like it was cut really well. Like, it was centered and everything, which is an issue on some old beta cards, can be. But also the fact that it's this Underground Sea. This is the beta draft Underground Sea, the beta draft Mox Emerald. You can point to this. That makes the card worth more because these are worth money because they're collectibles, and that ups the collectability.
This is the beta draft Helm of Chutzuk that went fourth overall in its pack.
Well, Ben was the only one, I think, who understood that even the junk rares are worth $300. Like, other people, I mean, and maybe at that point you can argue that, you know, you should be taking
You don't take the foil goy if you take the lightning bolt, yeah.
Maybe, yeah, maybe. But I think people were also taking lands. People were, like, taking lands before cards that were worth money. Like, I don't know for sure, but I think at some point lands went before a rare because the rare was unplayable or whatever. But just due to rarity, obviously, those rares were, like, $200-$300. It was nuts. The whole thing was crazy. I was just so happy to be a part of it.
It made me super happy to see Pearled Unicorns and shit get open in booster packs.
Merfolk of the Pearl Trident!
Made me remember... Fourth edition back in the day, busting booster packs of fourth.
I did like your
garbage cards.
You had a good tweet, Jason, making fun of me. I'll give it to you. It was solid.
Oh, saying you were saying it was an expensive draft and everyone was wearing gloves and they let you lumber around the stage.
Yep.
Is that the one?
Yep.
I made fun of you a lot that weekend.
Notoriously clumsy. And yet, I was the person holding the camera 2 inches away from the Beta Underground Sea. Somehow I looked into that responsibility. It was crazy. All right, so what else happened in Vegas, though? I worked a lot. What did you guys
do? Who cares about that? I worked a lot. I don't know. It was a Vegas GP, and Vegas GPs are incredibly exhausting for me because I do it real hard.
Yeah, as you should.
I eat a really expensive dinner every night. I get real drunk. I gamble a lot. It was a lot of fun. I play a lot of... We were like Battle Bond drafting at like 4 in the morning, just in the hotel, not even at a table. We were set up where all those cheerleaders were.
Sure.
When you walk through the hotel, like right before you went outside, we were just set up at that table, Battle Bond drafting at like 4 a.m.
Nice.
Just stuff like just not sleeping.
Yeah.
That's... Not eating well. Going to Fogo de Chao and then going to Bacchanal 8 hours later. Stuff like that. Just debauchery. And you can only do that for so long. And I was there for Tuesday through Tuesday.
Yeah, your body breaks down at some point.
My one regret.
Just says no.
And then I took the red eye, got a 3 hour nap, and I'm still awake now 2 days later. Like, I don't
know. My one regret is that Corbin and I didn't get to go out to eat together at Fogo de Chao.
So Corbin Sorry, could pay man. For it?
Yeah.
Maybe one day.
Vegas eventually Fogo costs twice what Fogo should cost. I got the bill and I'm like, you know, there's just one of me, right?
What, it's like $100?
Yeah, it was like $80 in Vegas. I'm like, this is like $45 back in Indianapolis.
It's Vegas, man, yeah.
Yeah, I got the money, but it was the principle of the thing. I'm like, Fogo's Fogo. It's like Vegas McDonald's dollar menu being $3 in Vegas, just like on the strip or whatever. Like, that doesn't make sense.
I got hosed by the convention center food more than normal. Like, I understand what convention center food is, right? Sometimes it's edible, though.
Oh, did you get sucked into the Quiznos?
No, I did not get sucked into the Quiznos, but like, I did go get the $5.25 hot dog twice.
Oh.
Look, man, you just got to put calories in your body when you... I put in 48 hours in three days.
So like, does Wizards not pay for your food?
We get a per diem, of course, but, yes, they do in that sense, but like, I choose how to spend my money, So yeah, usually I try not to eat, I'll bring a snack, and a drink or whatever. And, I will usually try not to get lunch at a GP just to not pay convention center prices. Right. And just hang off. But we were just working so long. Just needed something.
We did get tacos and beer delivered, so that was nice. On the last
Tacos and beer delivered.
Yeah,
you mean I didn't have to go there four times?
To the convention center, yeah.
I literally went to tacos and beer 4 times in a 7 day period.
Yay! Right.
Yeah, Marcel was making. He wasn't even impressed. He was like, "Go somewhere else." I'm like, "Up your butt, Marcel." Why don't you call your girlfriend and check in once in a while?
Yeah, got him. Got him. That was meta right there, man. That was meta. I get a text from Jason one night, and I just assume Jason's been drinking at this point. I hadn't even left Oklahoma yet. He's like, guys, Marcel is missing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Marcel's with JR. He's not missing.
They were in a botanical garden. Everything was fine. It was very peaceful in the botanical garden.
They were specking hard on Colony Hydra.
Yeah.
No, it was Slimefoot.
Oh, God. I just enjoyed when Monday morning, and by morning I obviously mean like 2 p.m. when we all woke up, because I went to bed about 6:30 Monday morning after the event. So, but whatever. I wake up in the afternoon, I just have a text from Jason that says, did anyone else win $250 and not remember how?
Yeah, I just woke up with a bunch of money in my wallet, and then I looked at my phone, and there was a picture of a bunch of chips that I texted to my wife.
And I'm like, and I just reply, you're welcome. Because I went to Jason, I was like, Jason, come play craps with me. And he's like, nah, I'm down money, man. I'm like, bro, I'm making money, sit down. And we both won $250 that night. You're welcome. It was great.
In like 15 minutes, I won $250.
I won money in Vegas. I walked out like plus 300 for the weekend. It's crazy.
There you go.
I feel like I did Vegas so wrong.
If food counts, I'm down like 800.
Well,
if food doesn't count, then I'm up like 180.
Yeah. You eat food at home. It totally doesn't count. Prices don't matter.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. So
yeah. Exactly. So, a funny story. I'm actually going to be back in Vegas in a few months for the World Championship. So, Anyone wants to go out for that one?
The world championship of what?
Magic.
I'm hoping to go out to the world championship of League of Legends for in South Korea in a few months.
Well, that esports arena they have set up in Vegas. Wait, you're trying to go to South really Korea? Sharp.
Yeah, Worlds is in Seoul this
No, he's going to North Korea, Corbin.
No, I just mean, like, that's a long fucking way to go for League of Legends, man. That's cool, though.
DJ, you would be super tall in North Korea because they're all malnourished.
Life goals.
But, I'm not. The plans aren't set in stone, but, like, the Worlds finals every year is, like, generally around my birthday, so.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's fun, man. My goal is to make it out to Overwatch League at some point. I don't super care to go to South Korea to see League of Legends, but I got to make it out to Overwatch League. All right, let's read some emails here before we move on. Everyone is, oh man, we are bringing you guys this podcast and we're having fun, but we are all beat up
from a week in Vegas.
I'm fine.
Wrecked.
Y'all are fine.
You know what I did on my recovery day, my quote unquote recovery day? I hung out with JR. That's what I did. So I didn't get a recovery day.
Yeah, you all are old. I'm fine.
You all are old. Shut up.
It's okay, DJ. You worked at a booth till 11, went home and took a nap.
DJ never even hung out with us.
Yeah, it's because I'm old, DJ. That's why I'm exhausted after Vegas. DJ never hung out with us.
And we're like, DJ, we're at the casino, man. You coming over? And I'm like, I have to be there in the morning. I've worked all day. I'm here. And DJ's like, I'm in bed, guys.
I went back to the Airbnb and curled up in a little...
Yeah, I'm at the Airbnb. I can't come. It's like a $5 Uber. Sorry, can't make it.
I got my feety pajamas on my little cap that flops over. And my teddy bear.
All right, DJ, read us some emails, man.
All right, this email comes to us from a future podcast guest, Paul.
A $40 patron, yep. A man who went to patreon.com/brainstormbrewery, gave us $40 a month so they can buy his way onto this podcast. If that sounds too cheap to you, it sounds way too cheap to me.
I'm going
to
say it's Paul Dij or DJ or Dej.
Spell it.
Really? D-I-G-E.
D-I-G-E. Well, if it was an O, I'd pronounce it Doge. Therefore, this must be Dij.
Right. That's what that was my first impression, too. But
use Dij in a sentence.
I figured I'd wait a couple months and then hit you guys up to schedule a date. Blah, blah, blah. Since I'm a $40 patron, do I get to skip the queue of plebes? Yes, you do. What are your guys' thoughts on SDCC Planeswalker sets? Do EDH players care enough to pimp out their decks with these versions? Is there even a decent demand profile for them to see meaningful long-term growth? That's the first question.
I don't
like them very much.
When they did it one time, everyone's like, holy shit. And then when they did them every year, they're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, like...
they don't have new ideas.
They're also not as good for cube as some other foils just because they're so hard to read.
Yeah,
like it, right. That's if you what get I was two of those say. In the same pack, you have to get your friggin' magnifying glass out to figure out which one you like. They're cool and everything, but they're not super practical.
I would also say that the first thing I did when I thought about this was not to go look at them exactly. It's I'll go look at Ugin the Spirit Dragon, because that card now has been out for 3 years, and there was a Ugin's Fate promo, which is probably just as rare, if not more rare. Than the Comic-Con promos.
It's like a masterpiece, yeah, maybe. Probably.
I bet it's less rare than that. I bet it's more rare than a masterpiece. But regardless, and the price on it has done essentially nothing. It's actually worth like the exact same price now as it was 2 years ago. So, and I was going to say the same thing about them being so hard to read that they're basically unusable. And now there's so many of them because they've done it multiple years. So yeah. The only ones I would actually think might have a little better upside would be the zombie ones or the hieroglyphic ones or however that worked.
I would say I would edge towards like the first print run, actually. Because the first print run was the smallest print run.
Yeah. Yes.
So I would lean towards...
And then there was like everybody who waits in line at San Diego Comic-Con gets one. Yeah.
Right.
They're just every... San Diego Comic-Con promos have always... It's been a thing for... 20 years where they give out exclusives. I remember, like, people stepping on each other's necks to get this Harry Potter tote bag from HarperCollins. And then at the end of the con, this woman had an armful of them. I was like, oh, shit, these are $200 on eBay. Gimme. And she gave me one. And I put it on eBay, and it was going for the cost of shipping. So, like, some of that stuff, it's like, okay, we got to have it today, and then no one gives a crap later.
Yeah, I forgot. I actually remember some of that stuff from, like, Gen Cons, and so I feel like I've had the same thing where I've hit some... I had one, I was so excited about it, and I sold it on eBay, and then, like, then they weren't worth anything after that.
I have Chandra's goggles from, like, a PAX event 6 years ago. I don't know if they're worth anything, exactly. But, like...
I mean, for what it's worth, the Liliana, the SDCC 2016 Liliana The Last Hope... has gone up from about $70 at the beginning of this year to almost $100.
Well, that's a playable card, though.
Right. That's what I was saying. It that one makes sense to kind of buck the trend because it's playable.
The rest of them are just EDH dirtily stuff. Like, I was
they're core set planeswalkers. Like, yeah. Who gives a shit?
All right. Part two. How much of the recent dual land price spikes are due to the increased number of legacy events this year? Is there a chance that we see CFB or Star City push for more legacy events in the future in an effort to maintain demand and the new price levels?
Nah, no. I think the dual land push has been like Team FOMO and people cashing out their crypto wallets.
Well, like, Star City and Channel aren't...
crypto's a whole other discussion.
Star City and Channel aren't incentivized to keep prices high. They're not... The logistics aren't there for them to create events that didn't exist previously to try to sell duels at a brand new, very high price that people are already, like, hard, like, on the fence about paying. They're not just going to make a bunch of legacy events to just try to promote, like, $700 underground seed. If anything...
Especially since SCG dropped the format fucking hard when people were playing it every weekend.
Yeah.
Right. Plus... It's not even like the only way they could possibly incentivize to do that is if they're just sitting on a ton of them and couldn't move them, right? But that's just not like, a thing. The initial, right? Like, you're always going to sell your underground.
Yeah,
seats.
The initial question was how much of the recent price spike is due to the increased number of legacy events this year? I think that's a small part of it, but overall, it's just like the supply on stuff is just starting to dry up. And like the price corrections, like for power and all this other stuff, just like. It's going to keep going up. That's just like the way it is.
Well, Jason mentioned crypto, and it's a good point because
it is.
A lot of the people who have the money to dabble around in $1,000 dual lands are also the people who had money to play around with crypto. And crypto made people a lot of money over the past 18 months. Now, I know it's cool to crap on crypto this year because since it
crashed in January.
Yeah, since it crashed in January, it's been really down / flat, whatever. People made a lot of money last year on it, and they cashed it out at the end of the year because they needed to pay their taxes because the government is now much more difficult in the United States on this. So you actually have to pay capital gains tax on what you gain in crypto. So a lot of it came out for those reasons. And I'm not going to get super deep into the crypto market, blah, blah, blah. The point is a lot of people who are the typical Magic type nerd who've been into the crypto market for a long time have a lot of money to spend.
Yep.
And Underground Sea is so expensive right now, and it's going to cool off over the next 6 months. You know, the beginning of the year push we see every year was much more much more wild this year, but it's still the same thing. It's just a larger jump, a much larger jump, to be fair, a much, much larger jump. But it's still there's no reason to believe it won't follow the same trend. Especially now after Vegas, you know, this was definitely the high water point, I believe, of the year. Everyone sets their sights on Vegas. All roads lead to Vegas. Now everyone's crypto money is spent or whatever, whether it was on power or underground seas or whatever. Their tax money is spent. We're going to get into the back half of the year. People are going to have school. They're going to have holidays. It's going to be the winter. All this stuff that typically where you see the prices cool off. And I think that's where we're at now. So, now is not the time. If you are like, man, do I need to get my underground seas right this moment? No, like you needed them 6 months ago, or you need them at any point over the next 6 months. So just that's my opinion. Now it's possible that it bucks the trend that it's done for the past 5 years, but I don't have a reason to believe it will do that.
We had trouble selling duels this weekend. I was behind a booth for 60 hours over the course of 4 days, and duels did not sell as well as. We'd expect. Power moved very well. Power and old school were very real, and there's still stragglers out there who are like, old school is not a real format. It's the frontier of legacy, whatever. Old school is very, very real.
It's very real to the people who play it, and it doesn't have to be a lot of people who play it.
Well, that's the thing, is that it's a real thing, and it is absolutely a format where you can probably make money if you are interested in the format to a genuine degree. It is not even close to something that you should try to get into if you don't know what's going on there. It's sort of like crypto, where like if you don't know anything about crypto and you're like, what are all these byte coins? Like, don't fucking touch it. If you're really good at EDH and you really love EDH and you know how the market works, you know how like cards move, you know what's good, you know what's bad, then you're gonna make money in EDH finance. If you used to play 20 years ago and you're actually interested in playing these old school cards and you genuinely care about the cards and you know what was good, what's bad, how the meta moves, then there's room for you to make money. But like, if you're just like a modern player who's like, oh yeah, there's all this money in old school and in crypto, just don't.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to compare it to Frontier or let's say Tiny Leaders or whatever, because those were formats that were supposed to be for the masses. And when people, for those formats to succeed, they had to be played at a store level, etc. That's not how old school works. Old school is played by people with a bunch of money who have the money to go to GPs to play old school, right?
Well, like, no. It's not even that. Like, old school is also being played by like people who are keeping, it's kind of like Smash, where like old school forums are popping up and like people are just driving the format by a grassroots level and like creating.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There are people who really want to do it. And it's the thing that appeals to them the most in Magic, and they have the resources to make it happen.
They're letting you play like CE stuff and like FBBs, yeah, and like revised like garb, like fourth edition. Like, it's, you can still play, but like most old school formats or most old school events will allow like 10 to 20 proxies or whatever. Like, it's not just like a rich kids club.
I mean, it's kind of a rich.
It started as one, but like the involvement and the interest is generated to a point where, like, they're having to, the rules are constantly changing and, like, oh, should we allow this type of thing because it's cheaper and it'll get more people in the format? Yeah, sure. Like, it started as just, like, a very strict, you have to play this style of Magic or else you're not one of the cool kids. And it's, over the course of not even 2 years, it's evolved to a point where you can just play a lot of different...
It's certainly become more inclusive, I mean... I guess what I was saying is that I don't think the metric for success for old school is the same as you'd apply to something like Frontier.
Correct.
You know, that's a good. Like, you don't old school to be successful, it doesn't mean you have to be playing it on a Tuesday night in your old.
Yes, right? I agree.
That's the difference.
And that is it for Paul's email. We will see you at some point in the next couple of months.
Yeah, man.
We've been doing an email for the last hour? That's crazy.
Hit us with an email. Hit us with the next one.
All right. Sure, let's pick this guy, I guess. His name is Ben. Hey, Ben. Paid for a new $10 patron after being a long-time listener. My question is, we split Magic in eras. Reserve list era, old school to Ice Age, older era, Mirage to modern, Zendikar era, popularity explosion, and RTR era printing through the roof. Are these fair? How would you categorize? I don't know if English is this person's first language, but that's fine.
Why do we bother with those eras anyway? Like,
well, that's I don't know. Why is this useful to considering financials? When is a card considered old? And what era are we in currently? Yes, Jason, I consider all of this one question. The question comes off the back of the pick of Druid Repository and Avacyn Restored, labeled as, quote, old enough. Keep up the good work. Hope you make it out to the UK sometime. European biolists are awful.
I believe that. That's an interesting question because there is some value to this, right? I think we say post-mythic era a lot.
Yeah.
And I think that tells you a lot because you know offhand that means that the rares are going to be worth a lot less and the mythics are going to drive the value on average, right?
I think that's fair. Like, I would combine old era with, like, all the way up until mythic era. Like, I'd say Onslaught and Shards of Alar are like relatively similar on a grand scale.
Interesting. I mean, this. Like, so I guess the point is there is some value to doing this stuff, right? Knowing that something's in there's also the first however many years of Magic, and I don't know what it is offhand, but we actually know the print run numbers
up to. And it's not true. I think it's the Dark or like Arabian Nights. I think, I don't know.
Yeah, so like that's an era where I mean, you actually know how much was printed, so you know how rare sets are in relation to each other. So there's value in knowing that.
I mean,
The divisions are arbitrary and they don't help you do anything other than like have a podcast. So, like, if you want to tell people some like goofy, it's like, oh, this is in the post mythic era, then yeah, like make up some snazzy stuff like that. But for the most part, you're not.
I guess what I'm saying is there is, you know, I mean, the question was, is there any value to it, right? I think post mythic is a good one. I also think the Age of Reprints is an interesting one, but I don't know if I necessarily would say, oh, in Return of Ravnica, they started printing things through the roof. I think it's maybe just more, at some point in the past 5 to 6 years, they have decided to reprint everything as much as possible all the time. But that's not relegated to just the new cards. You know, they're also reprinting older stuff whenever they get the chance.
All right. Next one, Zachary Kehoe. Hey, Brew Crew and Permaguest DJ, finally gave in to the repeated pitches made by Jason every cast and signed up mostly for the After Hours. Since we now know that the fall set will be yet another Return to Ravnica, do you think we should be expecting Shockland reprints? If so, are there financial implications?
Ooh, that is a big question, isn't
it? Yes.
Sure, and if there are, buy them when they're cheap.
Yep. Do you think they're getting reprinted?
I'd say, yeah.
I hope so.
I'm 90% sure they're getting reprinted.
I really hope so. I hope they don't do something stupid.
I see two possibilities. One, they get reprinted. That's what I would prefer.
Either they do or they don't. Good analysis.
Yeah, that's true.
No, but they could give us something like the Battlebond Lands or something decent.
What I'm suggesting is they Shocklands, when they first came out, obviously, blah, 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 super popular. They go back to it. Everyone wants the Shocklands again. They get them. Now, third time in, it's like, does it feel, I don't know, is trite the word to reprint them? Is it just like, this is just like, it's almost lazy? I can see if I'm a designer or whoever's responsible for this decision with Wizards, is it just feel lazy to just do it again? Maybe they want to do something else. Maybe they want to do something that's on the same level.
Is it lazy to do maybe a third Iron Man movie? Like, I think just give people what they want.
Yeah, but maybe. But it's also true that people don't know what they want until you give it to them. Maybe they're going to like up the ante here.
Did you just pull some Malcolm Gladwell spaghetti sauce lecture bullshit on me?
I mean, it's just true. It's just
true,
man.
That is a good point.
Maybe it's like the Commander Lands, or we just got a Battle Bond, right? Like, I hadn't really thought about that.
We didn't know we wanted those. Hey, Corbin, fucking hats off, too, because DJ and I thought those would dip to like $2, but they're holding $5-6. And it seems like people are basically done opening Battle Bond, so I think those crunched.
I was going to bring up that doubling season has also seemed to flatline at 40.
Yeah, nothing dipped as much as we thought it was going to.
No one opened it.
Well, no one opened because, like, yeah, like the drafts are cool, and then it's like, all right, we're done with Battle Bond. I'm not buying a box of that raw dogging it.
And they had a lot of issues with the release and the way they marketed it. And Bruce Richard wrote a really good article on TCG Player about it a week or two ago, with all the issues surrounding Battle Bond that are not the cards inside of Battle Bond. But I guess what I'm saying is, I think it's possible that maybe they decide, we're not just going to reprint Shocklands. We're going to give some people something on the level of Shocklands. I think that's a possibility.
So then the next follow-up after that is, where do you hit Shocklands to make sure that Stomping Grounds isn't the next, like, Wooded Foothills, or, like, isn't the next Scalding Tarn?
I don't want a land that is to Stomping Grounds what Gruul Cluestone is to Gruul Signet. I don't want that. I'm not going to buy
it. If they did that, that would be considered a failure. I agree. It's just, the thing is, we always see Wizards, and I think Mark Rosewater said this a million times. It's like, yeah, reprinting cards is cool, but why would we reprint cards when we can print something new and cool that people want? Now, in this case, they know that people want Shocklands, so I think they know that they can't Gruul Cluestone it.
Right? Shut up and play the hits.
If they go that route.
So. That's what we want. Shut up and play the hits. Give me a $4 Stomping Ground that I can jam in an EDH deck.
Those shocks are getting expensive again. They're getting up there.
Yeah, and I mean, it's definitely going to be one of those things where enough people expect it, and enough people are going to hold off on buying Shocklands up until the announcement.
Also true.
So, like, when Battle for Zendikar, we had $30 sculling tards or whatever, and then Mark Rosewater makes one Tumblr post that says, hey, they're not in there, and then we have $70 scalding tards because everyone was holding their, like, holding their money.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
So I guess if we get some sort of in concrete indication that they're not in there, the financial implication is,
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So I guess stay on top of the market. Now, if they do get reprinted, I imagine they'll be $10, right?
Probably lower.
Do you think 8 to 10?
I think lower.
Do you think? Really? No, there's no... I mean, like, every, but they're still playable on standard. They're really good standard.
Howl Fountain is like 7 right now.
Yeah, but Howl Fountain's not getting played in anything.
Well, it's injustice. I mean, it's play, just not as much as some of the others.
Not as much as it's going to be if there's a deck in standard for it.
Yeah, DJ, what you're not accounting for is that it's $7 now, but it's also $7 in standard. I guess, to be fair, when I was thinking, I was thinking of the more expensive ones.
Right, and
there is actually enough of a gap between them all now that it is hard to say.
I think they all get cut in half.
Okay.
Ta-da.
I don't think that Hallowed Fountain would be $3, but okay. Or...
Dude, I'll take every $3 Hallowed Fountain.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't think it would be $3, but sure. I think it sounds like we think probably 4 or 5 on the low end, 10 on the high end for the more expensive ones now.
Yeah.
And it also would fluctuate in the lifetime there in standard based on what's good.
Yes. But, like, I think 8 would be, like, the cap.
Okay. I hope so. I hope that's true.
All
right, you got another email?
I want a dozen and... Or 2 dozen of these.
Do we have an email?
All right, let's talk about some.
It's your whole job. It's your whole job to know if we have an email, DJ. What are you asking us for, man?
Do we have an email? I don't know. All right, let's do pick of the week.
Pick of the week. Pick of the week. Pick of the week. Time for the pick of the week.
I go first. I've got one.
Why do you get to go first?
I have one as well. So, Shelai, Voice of Plenty. A very powerful card, as it turns out. 3/4, flyer for 4. You, Planeswalkers you control, and other creatures you control have hexproof, and for 6 mana, green mana, you put a counter on each creature. So, there's a card in M13. I don't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but it's a 3/3 flying angel for 3.
Resplendent angel.
I'm sorry, what?
You said M13.
Yeah, it'd be M19, huh? It's because it was a 3/3. I had 3 on my brain. Yeah, so it's a 3/3 for 3 in M19. That is an angel that if you gain 5 or more life this turn, then you get an angel or something else in play. It's very powerful, right? And then we also have Lyra at 5 mana, which is a 5/5 flying lifelinker and gives all your angels +1/+1. Lyra's a mythic, already expensive to an extent. Shelai's actually the one between the two of those cards that sees some modern play. Not a lot, but a little bit. And this new one come out, Angel Stompy and Standard. I think people are going to try it.
But there's no reason to run it just Angels because,
well,
like, there's no...
Lyra pumps Angels, yeah.
And you get Metallic Mimic.
Unclaimed Territory.
Add Metallic Mimic into that curve.
Ooh. I mean, I guess that's also true. Ooh. Yeah. Yeah, Metallic Mimic into whatever the new one is, into Shelai, into Lyra.
Plus you got Unclaimed Territory, which is, you know, great for your mono-white deck, so...
Yeah, I mean, well, the thing is, like, this, the mono white life gain deck or the black white life gain deck, it's kind of a thing already. And at the top end of it, you have, I'm forgetting, but there's something else that makes a bunch of things if you gained life.
There's a thing that makes a bunch of things.
I'm trying to remember what it is.
You're talking about Regna that makes 2/1/1 soldiers
if
you gain
from,
life?
It's something from Ixalan, I think. I'm sorry, I can't remember it right now. I apologize for forgetting the card name, but the point is there was a deck that has been played.
Use the thing that makes a bunch of things, absolutely.
Yeah. But it was played at the Grand Prix level, and it makes some sort of token. So one of the vampire cards from Ixalan that triggers off of life gain. So the point is there was already something there, and now we're getting even more pieces to it. So I'm picking Shelai at $2 because that's the one that has modern playability and has a lower buy-in right now. For what it's worth, Lyra has also bottomed out at $12 market price. But I like the lower buy-in one there more because Shelai is also played in modern too a little bit.
Nice. Yeah, Corbin, what sets that from? M19.
Yeah, that's the one.
Man, not M13.
It's been a weekend,
I know 19 is not what you prefer, but it is the one that's legal.
It's the horse. I'm talking about the horse, Crested Sunmare.
So the horse vampire from Ixalan.
Well, it's played in a vampire deck in standard, is what it was. That's a real thing. I know. I'm sorry. If you get at the end, it's a 5/5 Other horse 7 indestructible. During events up, if you gain life, create a 5/5 white horse creature token.
I'm not taking that out of my horse's deck.
It's played in a tribal. It's played at the top end of a tribal vampire deck.
So metallic mimic on horse or angel.
Yeah. Either way, point is, Shalai, I think, seems to have bottomed out around that $2 market price mark. So, all right, who wants to go next?
Champion of Lamb.
I got a bottomed out.
Champion of Lamb.
Did I not call that last week?
No, you called Mary last week, and then you called Druid's Repository before that.
Yeah.
So, Champion of
Lamb. What
do you
like about Champion of Lamb?
It actually just got reprinted in the Commander Anthology 2, but the supply on those isn't super high, and...
Right.
I don't think this is like a buy it now at $1 and then it goes to $5 immediately just because there is that supply, but this is the kind of EDH card that will likely creep up to $3 over time.
It just wants to go in a lot of decks because...
It's really good in Najila specifically.
It's so good.
Because when you get those attacks in, your soldiers or your warriors that are being created pump Champion of Lamphole, and then getting Champion of Lamphole's power higher now makes those warriors able to get in unblocked.
Be unblockable.
Yeah. Champion of Landhold's been up and down the price. I mean, this thing was $3 back in the day, bottomed out at Bulker status 50 cents, climbed back up over $2.
Well, it bottomed out because of the reprint.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's getting away from that reprint.
Well,
times.
Not even then. It, like 2014, it bottomed out. That's when it was bulk. And then the reprint actually brought it up. Like, it was in Commander 2016. Which means it came out in 2015, and that's when the price started climbing.
It was in C16.
That's what I'm saying. Which means it came out in the fall of 2015, yeah. Right? Or yeah. So it kind of done. It did that thing we've talked about sometimes, where sometimes a commander set shows people a card that they didn't know existed before, because it was kind of a forgotten. You know, it's just an Avazin Restored card.
Well, plus like. Stuff has come along where it's really good, like Atraxa on Angry Omnath and shit like that. So, like, you know, decks that have wanted it have come along too. I have something real similar to DJ, something that was reprinted in a Commander deck that is going up predicated on Najila. Mine is Den Protector. Originally from Dragons of Tarkir in Commander 2016, and there's a pre-release promo foil version, and that's about all we got. These are like a buck-ish.
It's like, an e-witness, man.
Like a dollar. It's not quite an e-witness, but it's sometimes better, sometimes worse.
Yeah.
It's not as great in blinky decks, but like Den Protector's got it's got places where it's good. And it's a warrior. It's a human warrior. That matters. So
it is basically bulk. It was in Commander 2016, so it's got nowhere to go but up. It's certainly an easy...
Yeah, man. I was looking at a bunch of cards. Champion of Lamholt's one of the ones I was looking at this week. So, like, DJ and Eric are kind of on the same wavelength this week. It's Najila's making stuff do stuff. Go buy those dollar cards and watch them hit three over a year or two. So, Najila was in the top 5 decks on EDH Rec 2 weeks ago. I looked last week, it was in the top 3, and this week it's number 1. So, Najila,
wow. All right.
Yeah, the number 1 That's deck cool. built this week. So... It's getting there, man. People are excited about this card and everything else. And Battle Bond, they're sort of not building as much as we thought. Kind of thought Pier and Toothy, or maybe like the Knight and the Dragon pairing, or maybe the Planeswalkers. Thought maybe they'd get there, but
seems
really,
like Battle Bond's just been forgotten. Najila's like the only thing anyone's ever. Najila and the lands.
Battle Bond's out 2 weeks, and they're doing M19 spoilers.
Yeah.
So,
oh
like,
yeah. I mean, it was. Speaking of, mine went up today. Omniscience. And M19 looks crazy. We'll talk about it more next week, I'm sure, but it's a lot of good
Omniscience,
stuff.
Crucible. By next week, we're going to know everything, because by Friday, which is the day this podcast comes out, the whole set will be fully spoiled, and you'll be like, why didn't you use the dope? Because we didn't know.
So many cool things so far, but I'm excited to talk about it next week. It looks pretty exciting for a core set. All right. Anything else you guys want to talk about before we jump
okay,
out
so
here
here's
week?
The deal. I'm going to say it's Tuesday now. I'm calling Liliana of the Veil.
Ooh, called shot.
M19. And by the time this podcast comes out, I'll either look like a genius or I'll look like just a dude who got
That's
drunk
true.
And shot his shot. So either, if I'm wrong, so what, dude? I'm
you
just
said there were rumors
off.
On the internet about it. Is that people
if
is,
I'm
you
right,
think it's just hope? Are people
if
just
I'm right,
wishful
I'm
thinking?
I'm so smart. Yeah, it's just hope. Whatever. Unless it's a thing. It's,
unless it is Liliana the Last Hope. It could be Liliana the Last Hope.
Could be Liliana Vess.
It could be. It could be Liliana Vess. I'd be fine with Liliana Vess. It's like an $8 card.
Yeah. So could be any Liliana. I would have said no, but then this set went and put Omniscience and Crucible.
Yeah,
and
man, Crucible is just.
Well, one of the arguments that Jim Casale, one of the arguments that Jim had was that there's a Loxodon and Smiter-esque card in a Johnny's Last Stand.
It's true. That's true.
Which is the 4-mana enchantment that does a thing, but the other thing it does is if it, your opponent makes you discard it, you get a 4/4 avatar with, I think, S flying, but. You get an avatar that punches that Lily right out, so that is an argument to suggest that Liliana of the Veil was included in the set with precautionary measures.
I would have said
I didn't
no
know
what
about
it,
any of
but...
that. All I knew was just that I felt like shooting my shot on this podcast for posterity. So all hey, right,
there you go.
By the time you guys are listening, unless you're a Patreon, it goes to patreon.com/brainstormbrewery. And gets this podcast a little bit early. You're hearing this on a Friday, and you're like, Jason is so smart. Liliana was spoiled on Thursday, and we're in awe of him and his prowess.
Wow, there you go. Okay.
Or it gets, or a Liliana gets spoiled tomorrow, and then we just edit the pod. We take all this out in post.
All right, everyone. There you go. Called shot from Jason to end things tonight. We survived another year of GP Vegas. See y'all next time.
Am I going to do it next year?
Yeah.
Every year I say and every year I go.
And then every year you
go buy a Squatty Potty.
Why don't you come out from behind the booth?
What'd you say?
Fellas, why don't you just go to GP to go to GP?
I'd like to.
I was in D.C. like and not behind the booth, and you weren't there.
In one of these years, I'm going to go to Vegas for fun again. We'll see. Everyone, this is Brainstorm Brewery. Buy a Squatty Potty. SquattyPotty.com/BSB.
SquattyPotty.com/BSB.
All other podcasts are number 2.
We'll see you next week.
Wiki, 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 wiki.